Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Today, we're tackling a really significant book, one that definitely caused quite a stir.
Yeah, it really did. We're talking about Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion from 2006.
A book that I think it's fair to say didn't just join the conversation, it kind of ignited it, didn't it?
Absolutely. So for you listening, our goal here isn't about taking sides at all. We want to unpack Dawkins' argument carefully.
Right. He argues pretty forcefully that belief in a supernatural creator is, well, a delusion. And he offers this alternative worldview based on science and humanism. We're going to explore all that.
That's still so relevant, isn't it? I mean, it was foundational for what people call new atheism.
Yeah, it really forced this public discussion about, you know, faith versus evidence.
Mm-hmm. Challenging that automatic respect sometimes given to religious claims, asking for critical scrutiny instead. So before we dive into the book itself, maybe we should talk a bit about Dawkins himself. His background is key here.
Definitely. Richard Dawkins, I mean, he's a major figure, world-renowned evolutionary biologist, ethologist too.
So he held that prestigious professorship at Oxford, right?
Yeah.
The Simon E. Professorship for the Public Understanding of Science.
That's the one. And his whole career, really, has been about explaining Darwinian evolution, making it accessible.
You think about his earlier books, like The Selfish Gene. That gene-centered view was revolutionary.
And The Blind Watchmaker, which was this powerful argument against creationism, showing how complexity arises naturally. No need for a designer.
So that's the lens he brings to the God question. He's not coming at it like a theologian, is he?
Not at all. He's coming at it as a scientist. He demands evidence, logical consistency.
And for him, evolution is sort of the master key. It explains so much that, in his view, God becomes unnecessary as an explanation.
Precisely. It's the intellectual bedrock for his entire argument in The God Delusion.
Okay, so let's get into the book's core idea, the central thesis.
Right. So basically, Dawkins defines what he calls the God hypothesis, the idea of a personal supernatural creator God.
And he argues this belief is, well, false, held against strong evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, and that's why he uses the word delusion. He argues it fits the clinical definition. A persistent false belief held despite evidence. And he thinks it's a harmful one, too.
So the book kind of has two main jobs, then.
Exactly. Job 1, systematically take apart the traditional arguments for God's existence. Show the logical flaws as he sees them.
Okay. Dismantle the justifications.
Job 2, present an alternative, a positive case for a scientific, humanistic worldview. He wants to show that life without God isn't empty, but actually, you know, potentially richer in wonder and perfectly moral.
And who's he really trying to reach with this? Doesn't feel like he expects to convert, say, deeply devout believers.
Probably not. I think he's aiming more for the middle ground. Agnostics, maybe people who have doubts but haven't really articulated them, what he calls closet atheists.
Right. He wants to boost their confidence, maybe. Encourage them to see atheism not as something negative, but as intellectually sound. Morally sound, even.
Yeah, it's like a call for intellectual honesty. To come out, so to speak.
Okay, so let's dig into how he builds this argument, the structure. He starts by setting some ground rules, scientifically speaking.
He does. Chapters 1 and 2 are crucial for setting the stage. He makes a really important distinction right off the bat.
Between different kinds of religion.
Exactly. He says he fully embraces what he calls Einsteinian religion.
Which is like awe and wonder at the universe,
yeah.
That sort of feeling.
Precisely, that deep reverence for the cosmos, its complexity, its beauty. He says he's a deeply religious non-believer in that sense.
But that's not what he's arguing against.
No, what he targets is supernatural religion, belief in an interventionist God, a personal deity who answers prayers, performs miracles, you know, exists outside of natural law. That, he says, is a scientific hypothesis. Ah, okay. So he frames the God hypothesis as a claim about reality that can be investigated, potentially falsified, like any other scientific claim.
Yes. And he introduces his famous spectrum of probability for belief. From 1, absolute certainty God exists, to 7, absolute certainty God doesn't exist.
And where does he put himself?
He says he's a 6.9. So, a de facto atheist. He can't be 100% certain because you can't definitively prove a negative, but he sees the probability of God existing as incredibly vanishingly low.
So negligible, basically.
Right. Once he's established that framework, God is a testable hypothesis, demanding strong evidence, he then turns to the classic philosophical arguments for God. Chapter 3.
This is where he tackles things like Aquinas' arguments, the unmoved mover, first cause, those sorts of things.
Exactly. Thomas Aquinas' five ways, Dawkins pretty much dismisses them as logically flawed.
No, wait a sec. Some would argue he's being unfair there. Aren't those philosophical arguments often seen as operating outside the realm of empirical science? Is he setting up a bit of a straw man? That's a common criticism, but his point is about the logic within the arguments themselves. He argues they essentially beg the question.
How so?
Well, take the first cause argument. It says everything needs a cause, right? So trace it back, you get to a first cause, which we call God, but then it makes a special exception. God doesn't need a cause.
Ah, I see. So why the special pleading for God?
Exactly. Dawkins says you haven't solved the problem of origins, you've just stopped asking the question at a convenient point and labeled it God. It doesn't actually explain anything.
And the ontological argument, the idea that God, by definition of being perfect, must exist.
He calls that a mere word game, just clever semantics. You can't define something into existence, no matter how grand the definition sounds.
Okay, and he uses that famous analogy to make a point about proof.
The teapot.
Bertrand Russell's celestial teapot, yeah, is brilliant. If I claim there's a tiny teapot orbiting the sun between Earth and Mars, too small to be detected.
It's ridiculous for me to demand you disprove it. The burden of proof is on me, the claimant. Precisely. And Dawkins says the same applies to the God hypothesis. The onus is on believers to provide the evidence, not on non-believers to disprove it.
Which leads us nicely into chapter 4 and what he calls the ultimate Boeing 747 gambit. This seems like the real core of his scientific argument against God.
It absolutely is. It's his direct counter to the argument from design, the idea that complexity like a watch or an eye or the universe implies a designer.
The old watchmaker analogy.
Right. But Dawkins flips it completely. He says, okay, if you argue that something complex like life needs an even more complex designer, which is God,
then where did that super complex designer come from?
Exactly. You haven't solved the problem of complexity. You've just pushed it back a step and made it infinitely bigger. Who designed the designer? It leads to an infinite regress.
So the explanation is actually less helpful than the original problem.
That's his point. And this is where he uses that fantastic analogy, the crane versus the skyhook.
Explain that one.
Natural selection, Darwinian evolution, that's the crane. It's a real, understandable, gradual, bottom-up process. It starts simple and slowly, step by step, builds complexity over vast amounts of time. It does the explanatory work.
Okay, a crane lifts things incrementally from the ground up.
Right. But a creator God, Dawkins argues, is a skyhook. It's this magical, top-down, miraculous intervention that just assumes massive, unexplained complexity from the start. It hangs down from the sky and plonks the complexity into place, explaining nothing about its own origin.
So it's an intellectual cheat, in his view.
He calls it intellectually dishonest, yes. A cop-out that doesn't actually explain complexity, it just posits an even bigger unexplained complexity.
Okay, so he's argued God isn't philosophically needed and scientifically improbable because evolution is a better explanation for complexity. Where does he go next?
Morality.
Yes, chapters 6 and 7 tackle morality and also the role of scripture. He directly challenges the very common idea that you can't be good without God.
That morality needs a divine lawgiver. Right. He argues, no, morality has perfectly good Darwinian roots. Evolutionary explanations.
Oh, just.
He outlines four main ones. Things like kin selection. It makes evolutionary sense to be altruistic towards your relatives who share your genes.
Okay, protect the family. Makes sense.
And reciprocal altruism, the you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours principle.
Yeah.
Cooperation benefits survival.
Right, building alliances.
Also, reputation. Being seen as reliable and generous boosts your social standing, which helps you. And fitness advertising demonstrating desirable qualities like strength or generosity to attract mates.
So these are built-in tendencies honed by evolution that lead to what we call moral behavior. No divine commandments needed.
That's the argument. And this allows him to then critique the Bible, particularly the Old Testament, as a moral guide.
This is where that really provocative quote comes in.
The famous one, yeah. That the God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction.
Yeah.
He lists attributes like jealous, vindictive, genocidal.
Strong words. His point being that deriving modern morality from ancient texts is problematic.
Deeply problematic, he argues. And he introduces this idea of the changing moral zeitgeist the spirit of the age.
Meaning our moral sense evolves over time.
Yes, and he argues this progress, things like abolishing slavery, women's rights, gay rights, stopping child abuse, comes largely from secular developments, from reason, empathy, philosophical debate, humanism.
Not from religion.
Often, he argues, moral progress happens despite or even against religious dogma, overcoming outdated ethics found in scripture. We decide beating children is wrong, even if the Bible seems to condone it. Our zeitgeist moves on.
Okay, that's a lot to unpack from the chapters. If we pull back, what are the really big overarching themes or messages someone should take away from the God delusion?
Well, theme one has to be that the existence of God is a scientific claim. It's a hypothesis about the universe, and it should be subject to scientific scrutiny. It's not off limits.
And the lack of evidence is significant.
Very significant. For Dawkins, the persistent absence of evidence is evidence of absence, especially for an interventionist God who supposedly acts in the world.
Okay, theme two.
This one's quite controversial. Faith as a vice, not a virtue. This is where he uses that phrase, the great cop-out.
Explain that. What does he mean by cop-out?
He means faith is belief without evidence, sometimes even in spite of evidence. He sees it as an excuse to stop thinking, to stop questioning, to evade the hard work of evaluating evidence. He argues it actively discourages critical thought.
Wow. So not just mistaken, but intellectually irresponsible.
That's his argument.
Yeah.
And it naturally leads to conflict and irrationality in his view.
Right. And theme three seems to tie back to his core expertise.
Absolutely. Evolutionary explanations are sufficient. Natural selection is just this incredibly powerful, elegant, undesigned process that explains the diversity and complexity of life. It makes the idea of a divine designer completely redundant, unnecessary.
The crane works, so you don't need the skyhook.
You got it. And the final theme, which he argues with real passion, is about the harm of childhood indoctrination.
This is about labeling kids with their parents' religion.
Exactly. He finds it deeply problematic to call a young child, say, a Christian child or a Muslim child, before they're old enough to understand or choose. He compares it to labeling a child with their parents' political party.
Why does he see it as harmful?
Because, he argues, it prejudges their beliefs. It closes down their minds, conditions them to accept dogma without question, and hinders their ability to think critically about these huge questions later on. He considers it a form of psychological abuse, which is very strong language.
It really is.
Yeah.
And Dawkins is known for his sharp phrasing. The book's full of memorable lines, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. He's a master rhetorician. They're designed to stick in your mind and challenge assumptions.
What's one that really encapsulates his approach?
Probably the one about extending skepticism. We are all atheists about most of the gods that humanity has ever believed in. Some of us just go one god further.
Ah, that's clever. It makes atheism seem less radical, more like just being consistent with the skepticism everyone already applies to Zeus or Thor or Ra.
Exactly. It normalizes the position. Then there's the direct hit on faith.
The cop-out one.
Yeah. Faith is the great cop-out, the great excuse to evade the need to think and evaluate evidence. That really crystallizes his view of faith as intellectually dishonest. It's probably the line that generates the most heat.
I can imagine. And maybe one more. Something about science.
There's the one where he says, I am against religion because it teaches us to be satisfied with not understanding the world.
Okay, so that positions religion as actively hindering curiosity, as an enemy of scientific inquiry.
Right. The idea that saying God did it is where the questioning stops, whereas science always keeps asking how and why.
So, thinking about all this,
how
might you, the listener, apply some of these ideas in everyday life? What are the practical takeaways?
Well, one obvious application is just cultivating that intellectual skepticism Dawkins champions, applying the burden of proof principle more broadly.
So, when you hear any extraordinary claim, maybe a wild political promise, a new miracle diet, some pseudoscience thing you ask, where's the evidence? Is the person making the claim providing it?
Yeah.
Use that Russell's teapot standard.
Exactly. Don't be afraid to say, show me. Another area is moral reflection. The book encourages you to think about where your own ethics come from.
To maybe disentangle them from religious dogma, if that's your background.
Yeah. To consider whether morality based on empathy, reason, consequences, maybe something like utilitarianism might actually be more robust and flexible than just following ancient rules without question.
And maybe counterintuitively, He argues his view actually enhances wonder.
He really does. It's about fostering wonder in reality, right. Finding that spiritual fulfillment, that sense of awe, not in supernatural beliefs, but in the actual cosmos, in the elegance of physics, the depth of evolutionary time, the complexity of the brain.
So science doesn't kill the magic. It reveals a deeper, real magic.
That's the idea. Awe inspired by understanding, not by mystery alone.
Okay, as we wrap up, what's a final thought or maybe something that particularly struck you about revisiting the God delusion?
For me, I think what stands out is the positive case he tries to build. It's easy to focus on the critique, the dismantling of arguments, but he spends a lot of energy trying to show that atheism isn't just a negation, but an affirmation.
An affirmation of what?
Of a worldview based on evidence, reason, natural wonder, and human-derived ethics. He presents it as intellectually honest and, importantly, fulfilling. It's not a bleak picture he paints.
That's interesting. For me, I think the most valuable takeaway is that core paradigm shift he pushes for.
Which is?
Just the act of treating belief in God not as a protected special category of thought, but simply as a hypothesis. A really grand, really old hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
But a hypothesis nonetheless subject to the same standards of evidence and reason as any other claim about how the universe works.
And realizing that if that hypothesis doesn't hold up under scrutiny, it's the meaning, purpose, morality, wonder they aren't lost. They can be found, perhaps even more richly, through secular humanistic means, through understanding the real world and our place in it.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.